Shop Woodhouse Ford first and experience the difference today. Our sales staff is here to make sure you find your perfect car, truck, or SUV. Visit one of our three convenient locations in Blair, Omaha, or Plattsmouth, or shop online at woodhouse.com. Woodhouse Ford. Build Ford proud.
So Nebraska-Wisconsin is the 37th FBS game that has been postponed or canceled. It is actually week 9 of the college football season, and Nebraska has only been involved in one of those. Let's welcome in. There's a lot to get through here from Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity who joins us. First and foremost, why does the Big Ten hate Nebraska? Please answer.
Oh, boy. It's been a fun few days on Twitter, hasn't it?
Well, and, you know, I think it's one of those things that you get a little worn. I mean, we're all fatigued. We're worn out. I think we're all a little on edge. We're disappointed. I think I'm disappointed. That's our job. You know, you're looking forward to this weekend. But you and I are realistic, and many others are realistic, that there is a pandemic that is raging on, and we're trying to play a football season. And you look at what's going on in the county where Madison is, in the state of Wisconsin, and things start to make sense. There's a lot of loopholes, though, and things that you go, okay, why this, and this. Let's start with the current. We'll work backwards. Were you surprised at all that Nebraska tried to put together a game this weekend, and also not surprised that the Big Ten said nada?
No, I'm not surprised at either one. Nebraska's made it very clear throughout this entire process that they want to play football, they want to play as much as they can. And I think they're at a point in their program where it is important to get games in. They've got to be able to make up that progress on the field in order to kind of take that next leap and everything else as a program. So I'm not surprised by that. I mean, it would have been interesting to, a 2-day turnaround to prep for a team. That would have been interesting to see, but we were kind of debating internally at Hail Varsity, like, what's the value of playing a lesser team, whatever team you can get? And is that getting that win going to help you at all versus what's the value of getting the young guys extra reps and kind of that balancing act of trying to figure out if it's worth trying to play a game? But I'm not surprised they did it, and I never expected that one would happen. The Big Ten's made their protocols very clear. And from the beginning, they said no non-conference. We're kind of restricting this to just our teams here. And we're going to make this work as best as we can. And like you said, there is a pandemic going on. And I throughout this entire process, I have tried to kind of not feel too strongly about anything, knowing that I'm just a dude sitting at home and I can find anything out there to support whatever take that I would necessarily want to have. Mm-hmm. So I just have a hard time vilifying the Big Ten for being overly cautious. Like you said, there is a pandemic going on here and it's getting bad in a lot of places in the country, including in the Big Ten footprint.
See, it's very on brand for Nebraska to try and find a game. I think it's very interesting that they worked on the relationships in a short amount of time to get a discussion going, what the parameters would be, what the money would be, how you would get here, when the game would be, all of those things. Good on Nebraska's interior department of football to get the ball rolling. I wonder what it would have been like on a Monday and Tuesday. I also wonder, Jacob, two things, and we discussed this in the crossover. One, if Nebraska could have found a fellow Power Five, if the chancellors and the presidents who met this morning at 7 a.m., if they would have listened a little bit more, and then if they're not going to listen, I think that's troublesome because this is not going to be the first game that's canceled, and there may be other schools that come up with a plan as well, but now they're not going to be able to approach the board because they've already said, nah, you're not playing. I just want to know how those conversations are, or what Ronnie Green, when he told his other 13 schools today, why Nebraska wanted to play and how it was going to work, how it was received.
Yeah, this whole thing is obviously unprecedented. We don't really know I don't think anybody has any idea what the right thing to do is at this point, because there's still so little information. Everything's changing. I don't. If there's any year going in to have to be able to have some flexibility, it would be this year. But at the same time, you don't also want to like overreact, like and start making a bad decision in the case in the name of football, I guess, in this case. So like that, I don't know. Like, I think it is worth considering that precedent. Like, all right, where are we now compared to where we were when we set this down? Mm-hmm. Do we feel like this is something that is more feasible, more viable, and safer now? But I guess I don't know what those conversations were like that went into the decision beyond just like, hey, this is our precedent. We're sticking to it.
Remember when I asked you if the Big Ten hates Nebraska? The Big Ten Network is actually replaying right now the 2014 game in Madison. We don't need to remind.
How'd that game go?
Well, it went really well for one guy who's now in the NFL on his second team. Jacob Padilla from Hail Varsity joining us. So let's go to the Wisconsin situation. I contend that there is going to be more cases at Wisconsin, and I even think the Wisconsin-Purdue game next week might be in jeopardy. The wiggle room, wiggle room's probably not the right word, but in the phrasing of this orange, red, we've learned all the coding and what it means, and we've all tried to do the math, and we try and do the math, but we don't know a lot of the numbers that are involved in the math in terms of who you're testing and so on and so forth. Do you think that the verbiage in giving the schools the power to say, nope, we're going to pause it, instead of the Big Ten stepping in, that this has now opened the door that we will see this probably a couple of more times before we get to the end of the season?
Probably, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you see, so just think about Wisconsin Monday, we were just fine. Mm-hmm. Tuesday, the kind of report about Mertz coming out and then started getting worse, and then by Wednesday it was shut down. So that thing moved quickly, and that's kind of how the virus spread throughout the program, how the testing results came back. Like, I very highly doubt that the number stops at 12, the 12 that we got, who we probably won't find out unless it gets to the point where they are forced into the red later on, and then that alters the timeline. I don't know how that's going to work necessarily, but shutting down when you see things going the wrong direction to try to get it under control before it gets even worse. Mm-hmm. I think it's smart to allow the programs to have that flexibility and allow to be that proactive, because reaching that red point means you're in a bad spot. So if you can do whatever you need to prevent it from getting there, then kind of give your guys time away, get a chance to get through all the testing, let kind of the incubation period go, and bring everybody back and see, all right, where, how widespread was this in our program? And if they shut it down when they did, to give themselves a chance to salvage the rest of their season and to try to get back get back on the field as soon as possible. It had nothing to do with, I'd be very surprised that it had anything to do with being afraid to play Nebraska or anything to do with Nebraska. It's simply they didn't like the direction that it was trending in their program. They want to try to get it under control so that they can return to the field as soon as possible.
And the more we find out, the campus is not doing very well. I mean, their positivity rate is sky high. Dane County, it seems like on the nightly news the last couple of nights, all the major reporters have been somewhere in that county talking about the escalating numbers and cases and ICU beds that are packed in Dane County, where Madison is, or in the state of Wisconsin. So let's shift away. We're all going to have the weekend off, sit back and watch other games around the country in week 9. Let's go back to last weekend. I was all ready yesterday to come in here, Jacob. And you get the discussion about the World Series, but you got leading up to this game, what it's going to mean, Nebraska, can they stop the run, so on and so forth. And I was also going to talk about two guys that I think, one of them leading up to Saturday, and another post-Saturday have really increased their Q rating, and they got a chance to talk to the media the other day, Luke McCaffrey and Casey Rogers. Let's first start with Luke McCaffrey. We know that Luke McCaffrey wants to be a quarterback, but Luke McCaffrey can do a little bit of everything, as we saw in high school, whether it be a wide receiver while he's catching passes from his brother or when he takes over at quarterback. Do you think, looking at the extra year that Martinez gets next year, being only a junior, could Luke McCaffrey spend his whole career at Nebraska doing essentially what he did this past Saturday, Jacob, and he would be okay with that?
That's tough. Would he be okay with that? Yeah, that's kind of the question here. And this quarterback room got a little bit more convoluted adding in that extra year for everybody because, yeah, it's not costing everybody a year of eligibility, but it is costing them a year of their life. And how many guys want to use the extra eligibility, stick around an extra year in college? McCaffrey seems like at this point he's happy to play any role that he can to help the team. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he's able to get on the field now, I think that will kind of not necessarily keep him happy, but keep him engaged and keep him feeling like, hey, I'm contributing to this program. So that's always good to have your players feel valued. I don't necessarily know that two more years of 20 snaps a game. I believe he was on the field for 21 plays, and 15 of those were as the quarterback without Martinez on the field by himself. So I don't necessarily know that he'd be willing to sign up for two more years of that. Obviously, mm-hmm. We've already seen his brother transfer. Obviously, that doesn't necessarily mean a ton, but we've kind of seen that it's just kind of the way it goes with quarterbacks, and it's tough to keep guys that are only separated by a year or so. And with Martinez getting an extra year now, it kind of extends that a little bit. It makes it tough to keep those guys in the room, especially if they're talented, especially if they feel like, hey, I should be playing. So I don't necessarily know that we're going to see this for two more years beyond this season, but it's certainly an interesting setup they've got right now.
I want to go back to that stat you just rattled off. So if he's on the field for 21 snaps, which it felt like he was on the field nearly the entire game, he touched the ball in all but six of those snaps then. Because he carried it 9 times, he threw it 5 times, I guess, and then, he carried it 10 times, I believe, threw it 5 times and caught a pass. I mean, that's a nice little percentage. Boy, I felt like he was on the field almost every single play. Now, the thing that helps in this situation, and I believe you're right, he came here to play quarterback, but he's one of those guys that is excited to be on the field, and he might not right now be QB1, but he's one of the best 11 they've got on that side of the football, and he's one of their best skill guys. He's got great football IQ, and if this is the case and Adrian Martinez doesn't do anything to give his job away, I mean, you're there to win football games. Put him on the field as much as possible, and he's a kid that's really popular. You can tell that when he's around people, people smile. They get a little extra buzz, and I got that sense, I don't know if you did on Saturday, that whenever he was on the field, wherever he was lined up behind Adrian Martinez, split out from Martinez in the slot, whatever he was doing, it just seemed like there was a little extra buzz because you didn't know what was going to happen. And then we saw, you know, right away when he goes 47 on the counter.
Yeah, and I think that being his first touch of the season, I think that only kind of added to the buzz around him and the excitement for people. And because obviously that one play accounted for a very large chunk of his yards for the entire game. So there were still some nice plays afterward, but nothing else that kind of matched that. So I think, like you said, you feel like he was on the field the whole game. And I think that kind of set the impression for the rest of the game. So it'll be interesting to see. They averaged 10.7 yards a play on the 6 snaps that Martinez and McCaffrey were on the field together. 47 of those came on that play, though. So that was a big chunk of their offense from those guys. And there definitely is, I mean, throughout the – it started last year when he got in and see got in there and set and made a few big plays, and people were already calling to get him out there. People wanted him to start, even though he threw all but, I think, one pass from the pocket downfield last season. In all of his snaps, he attempted one pass downfield from the pocket. So everything they ran with him was kind of more trick-designed, quick plays here, not necessarily something where he had to make a lot of reads or tough throws or anything. So, but the hype continues to build, and that being his first touch of the season is only going to add to that.
The another part of the disappointment of Nebraska not playing this weekend, of course, you have a limited time to play your eight games, and to build off what you saw glimpses of on Saturday, and that was especially against the Wisconsin team that the last 2 years have run for 690 against Nebraska. The defensive line got more of a push. They didn't get pushed around. And then going back to Casey Rogers, we know that to beat Wisconsin, you got to stop the run, you got a chance to win the football game. But what were your initial thoughts of the defensive line? There were some quirky combinations. There were, you know, not always three down linemen. You'd have a lot of sets with two defensive linemen. I mean, Eric Chenander schemed up a lot of stuff. But what were your initial takeaways from the first week of a group that we all were kind of like, okay, a little suspect on that defensive line coming into this season?
Yeah, you said there weren't always three down linemen. They only had three down linemen on the field for, I believe it was 20 snaps all game. So that I was not expecting that. I was not expecting to see a lot more outside linebackers on the field than I was defensive linemen. Because although they were unproven, I felt like their depth was pretty good up front. And at outside linebacker, I didn't feel as good about that position. But you go to the game and they decided this one in particular. It'll be interesting to see how many times in the Big Ten this is what they go to. Is this kind of what they're looking towards, trying to get more speed, athleticism on the field? Or was it kind of more Ohio State specific where, yeah, they got some really big dudes up front, but they got a lot of athleticism and speed all over the field, and we just feel like we need to be a little bit quicker out there. So that'll be interesting to see how this defense progresses moving forward once we get a few more data points under the belt, because two defensive linemen, that we'll see when they add Jordan Riley to that mix. We'll see if Keem Green gets a few more snaps here and there. It was Ben Stille, Ty Robinson, and Casey Rogers playing the vast majority of those snaps. And then Damian Daniels started and got in there for about 20 snaps, and then Keem Green for 10, and then some few others after that. But that was basically kind of the main three is Stille, Robinson, and Rogers. And Robinson and Rogers were two guys last year. Obviously, Robinson redshirted, but they both played in like three, four games between each. Got a few snaps here and there and showed some things, but weren't necessarily ready to make a big impact last year. Now this year, the coaches seem like they've made a big leap. And we saw some good things from both of them. We saw some rough moments. And I think that's the biggest value of that Ohio State game is you finally have some plays to put on tape and show them the film and like, all right, what happened here? How'd you get washed out this play versus, all right, you had a really good rep here. You made a play in the backfield. Get a chance to kind of continue to teach these young guys and get that experience for them because there are some guys in that room I'm sure they really like, and Robinson and Rogers are two of them.
I was on a talk show in Columbus yesterday, and they weren't overwhelmed by the way Ohio State played, especially like the offensive line. The running backs didn't get going. They thought the offensive line had to knock some rust off. We talked a little bit about Nebraska, and I think the sentiment is Nebraska's offense was underwhelming. But I just got the sense that Ohio State thought they could have played better. I mean, 52-17. They're going to be better Saturday night. They're going to be better later in the season. But we talked about Nebraska, and I've asked other people this that have come on this week, Jacob, and I'm very interested in your perspective because I like how you look at games. You don't go over the top. Was the first half and the way Nebraska at times played or looked physically, 14-14, but after that it was 38-3. Was there enough in the first half to convince you that Nebraska is a better team than the last time you saw them?
Yes, I think so. And a part of that, part of the final score was kind of those two turnovers and a few of those plays that really went against Nebraska and cost them with some of those penalties that extended drives and that kind of stuff. So you saw them compete through 26 minutes, and then something went really wrong there, and it just spiraled out of control with that disastrous drive at the end of the half and giving up a score there, and then Ohio State getting the ball first, start second half, and marching down the field. So that, I think, certainly demoralized them. Maybe they didn't, especially with some of the guys they were missing, they didn't have the depth to keep it up throughout the full game. I think those inside linebackers, I'm sure, the two starters, seniors, didn't come off the field until garbage time. They played every snap. Mm-hmm. Last year we saw them rotate three guys in there, try to keep guys fresh. And with Luke Reimer out and with them deciding to play Nick Henrich at outside linebacker in this game, they didn't feel like they had anybody. Garrett Snodgrass was the next guy up, and he didn't get in there until the last two drives. So I think coupled with things going wrong and kind of spiraling out of control and maybe a lack of depth in spots kind of hitting them as the game went or on is what ended up leading to the final score. But there were certainly a lot of reps out there where they did a lot of positive things. It's the problem is they just weren't able to sustain it for entire drives defensively, especially. And we saw them tackles for losses, sacks, stop them at the line, putting them in third and long situations or fourth down situations. And they needed to make one more play, and they weren't ready to make that play. And that's got to be the next step is like, all right, we're playing well now. We've gotten ahead in the sticks. Now we have to make that one more play to get off the field. And that's what we're going to have to do moving forward to kind of get to that level where they can compete against teams like Ohio State. And you're coming away with a really good feeling as opposed to, yeah, we saw some things, but we also lost 52-17. So there's some progress there. Unfortunately, would have liked to see kind of the step forward into week two, getting that extra data point to see, all right, how much of that progress was Nebraska, how much was it Ohio State kind of giving up some stuff and then kind of sharpening things up there.
Well, and you could be possibly playing a 2-0 Northwestern team next Saturday in Evanston if they win in Iowa City. The one thing it does give us, you brought up Luke Reimer, so there was the sentiment maybe don't want to rush him back this week. You would think another week he could be back for Northwestern, which would be key. You know, Colin Miller played exceptionally well, Honus, but they played a lot. Luke Reimer has proven that he can be on the field in a Big Ten game and you're not going to miss a beat. But this also gives us this opportunity, Jacob. We get at least 10 more days of the drama of will Omar Manning play or not play? do we know what that situation is? And another part, and I do say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, they have to address the wide receivers, guys that are available to them and how guys play when they are the wide receivers out there. Your assessment of week one with the wide receiver play and what you think can be fixed between now and Northwestern.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised by anything we saw in that game. I think it pretty much went exactly as they told us it was going to go, just in terms of listening to the press conferences and who they talked about and all those sorts of things. The guys that played were the ones that were the most mentioned. I would say it was Wandale Robinson and Cade Warner and Levi Falk, and even Wyatt Lever got in the game early until that false start kind of cost Nebraska, and we didn't see him again. But those are the guys that got on the field early. We didn't see Alante Brown or Marcus Fleming until the very end. And we didn't see any of those other guys. And a couple of Jamie Nance and Damarian Houston, obviously Omar Manning, didn't even make the trip. So if this is going to be what we're going to see all season long, I think it's going to be a tough season for Nebraska. I don't believe that's going to be the case. I think hopefully now we got an extra couple weeks here. Hopefully those younger guys in practice will get a chance to kind of take strides. The guys that are banged up will get a chance to get fully healthy and get a full week of reps under their belt. Hopefully that'll allow the coaches to have more confidence in them. But it's going to have to be a case where you're growing throughout the season because you've got so many newcomers coming in, and the coaches don't love playing guys that haven't really earned their trust yet. And Wandell Robinson and Cade Warner are the only two guys that have any real history with these coaches now. And Levi Falk is a fifth-year senior grad transfer guy coming in here who's played a lot of football and does a lot of the little things that they want. So if Cade Warner and Levi Falk are your two outside receivers all season long, they're going to have a tough time, I think, scoring enough points and keeping up with a lot of teams in Big Ten. But I think we will get a chance to see some of these other guys crack in there. And if they're able to do well with their reps, then who knows what kind of the ceiling is for the offense.
Well, and I think the offensive line will protect the quarterback this year. So that just adds to the wide receivers. Find a way to get open. Get off of the line of scrimmage. Make yourself available, because I think the offensive line will keep the quarterback at Nebraska more upright this year than at times they did last year, which is a more of a sense of urgency for wide receivers to get on the field, because you might have a chance to get the ball in a better area than you did last year.
Well, and that's kind of I think a lot of us expected a bounce back season from Adrian Martinez, and a lot of that came down to the experience plus the talented additions on the offensive line, with the guy like Bryce Benhart getting the mix and some of the other younger guys cracking in there and pushing the older guys. And then the remade wide receiver room. We're not seeing that remade wide receiver room just yet, but the offensive line, if they can hold up, then it kind of lessens, it puts less of the pressure on those receivers to be ready to go as quickly as maybe otherwise would. So now you've got a chance to keep kind of keep the run-heavy part of the offense, keep mixing those wide receivers in here and there when you get a chance to, and hopefully it'll give the chance for this offense to grow as the season continues.
All right, let's shift over to basketball here as we finish up. You got an opportunity with a Final Four caliber team that's playing in this city. You start to get excited. You get more excited when you see a schedule, but then you're like, okay, I hope we get to the games in Sioux Falls. I hope we get to KU. Omaha's about ready to release their schedule. It's a pretty aggressive non-conference schedule. Nebraska is still waiting. Let's first start with Nebraska, Jacob. It is the 29th of October. Their MTE is supposed to begin on the greatest day of the calendar, November 25th. But they haven't heard anything. Do you have any idea maybe where the Big Ten is on releasing a conference schedule, then saying this is how many non-conference games you can play, here's the protocol? Because I know the MTE is moving forward, but I would still be a little bit nervous that we've made it this far and they have not signed off on it.
Yeah, I think we're getting to the point now where they've got no choice but to start laying down the guidelines for conferences. And I don't know if they're waiting to the last possible second to try to make the best decision they can, to where they won't have to adjust things later on. We saw how that went for them with football, where they put a plan out there and then almost immediately scrapped it. So I don't know if maybe that's what's going on here. I'm trying to remember. I think Bill Moose or somebody might have said something about thought they'd be hearing something somewhat soon, within a week or two. We're kind of in that window now. So hopefully we'll hear something here moving forward. And it seems like that they're kind of going forward with that MTE. It's just a matter of, will Nebraska be able to be part of it, since they did kind of like contract this out to the Elevate Hoops thing to put this together. Oklahoma State, obviously, I guess I'm trying to think that back to their statement, that was kind of the most interesting thing, part of this entire process, I think, because they're the one team that put out a full statement. They're the one that leaked the name of the event, and they're the one that said pending approval of the Big Ten. So I would think for all the other conferences, all the other teams that are being involved in this, they'd have to have some clarity here going forward, especially with the Orlando events falling apart. Now there are a lot of teams out there that are scrambling to try to figure things out. So obviously I think perhaps this BMT here, we'll get a chance to grab a few of those teams to kind of round out the field. We'll see here as teams kind of put in place their backup plans, and we start here, and we've already seen some other teams kind of all right, here's what we're going to do instead, kind of pivot and all that kind of thing. So the Big Ten's going to have to make a decision here. You can't call it a 2 weeks before the season's supposed to start. All right, fine, you can play. It's going to be conference only, so they've got to make a call here. If we end up having to change things later on, okay, but you got to give them some guidance here so they can move forward.
We'll make this quick because Nebraska just put out a statement, and I know that you'll have to deal with that, and we'll read that to our listeners. Big East yesterday, media day. The Big East, I think, is going to be very exciting this year. You know that they want to play. They're looking for all different avenues to make sure that they get their entire season in. We sometimes look at preseason polls in terms of who players are on the first team or the player of the year or where Creighton seems to fall, not getting a lot of respect in the preseason. I think when I saw yesterday that Villanova, who has a chance to win the third national title in a short amount of time with the abundance of talent they have, including Daniels, the Tulane transfer that I think they'll help him out at guard, they're preseason one, Creighton's preseason number two, Marcus Zagorowski is preseason player of the year. I don't think I had a problem with the Big East poll this year.
No, I think that's right. And then Providence and UConn, 3 and 4, in some order, that's probably a safe call right now with what they're bringing back. But about the only thing that I didn't agree with was Charlie Moore making first team, especially over someone like James Bouknight coming in or some of those other teams on the or some of those other players on the second team. I doubt DePaul wins enough games to have somebody on the first team. And two, I just don't think Charlie Moore's that good, despite his overall counting numbers. I think he's part of the problem with them, not them kind of falling apart last year. So that's about the only thing that I really have to quibble with from Big East media days and the results of the polls. But, yeah, hopefully they're able to have a season this year because it's shaping up to be a pretty exciting one.
Knock on wood and seeing some non-conference games that are coming together on that first weekend. That could be pretty good. Hopefully we get there at the end of November. Jacob, I appreciate your insight. Great work by you and the rest of the crew on Hail Varsity. I know a lot of things going on. I'll let you now get to work reading through this statement.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks.
That's Jacob Padilla. George, you want to take a break? You want me to read this statement? It's nothing. People aren't going to be jaw-dropping. It's just a joint statement released within the last couple of minutes from Bill Moose and Ronnie Green about the cancellation on Saturday and their pursuit of playing UT Chattanooga that was denied at 7 a.m. this morning by the presidents and chancellors of the Big Ten. We'll do that when you return. Lots of emails. Trust me, George has told me we got to get through the emails. We will do that on a Local Music Thursday. And some of those emails can be about fantasy football because Joe Bartel is going to join us from RotoWire coming up at 1:00.